Welcome to Think Again, a podcast by Macquarie Asset Management, providing financial advisors with a fresh perspective and innovative insights designed to keep you and your clients a step ahead.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Denise St. Ivany. Today, I'm joined by two guests, once again with Greg Gizzi, head of U.S. fixed income and head of municipal bonds here at Macquarie Asset Management, and Colleen Spagnolo, senior municipal analyst on the municipal bonds team. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Denise. Thanks for having us again.
Hi, Denise. Thanks for having me.
Well, today we want to discuss municipal credit, but first, could we take a step back and quickly recap the municipal market? Greg, how about you lead off and provide us with an overview of your thoughts on where we go from here?
Absolutely. Those of you on the podcast listening on can remember the torturous year that muni investors faced in 2022. We had record outflows from tax-exempt bond funds, which translated into uncharacteristic losses in the asset class. The investment grade index was down a little bit over 8.5%, and high yield was down over 13%. We suspected that the Fed would continue to aggressively raise rates in order to affect a slowdown in demand to help control the inflation. And we are starting to see that in the economic data. And the good news, although we haven't seen it to the degree that we expect, is that we're starting to get some normalization in the muni market. So what does normalization mean? If you look at return profiles, both from a credit standpoint and a maturity standpoint, over long periods of time, 3, 5, 10, 15, all the way out to 40 years, there is a pattern which exists that says, as you go down the credit spectrum, you should get outperformance. So going from triple A's down to triple B's in the investment grade category, you should get more return out of triple B's. And the same thing is true from a maturity spectrum. If you go out the curve, given the steepness of the muni curve, over longer periods of time, investors are usually rewarded with higher return. That was the complete opposite last year. Both credit and curve underperformed. And what we've seen thus far in the performance in the muni market in 2023 is a normalization of those long-term trends. So when we look at credit returns so far in 2023, we're getting normalization. So the 22 plus or the long part of the curve is the highest performing segment, followed by the 20-year part of the curve, then the 15-year part of the curve. What's not happened yet, and I think we referred to this phenomenon in our last podcast, we haven't seen the recovery in credit. So if you look at the investment grade index return in the first quarter of 23, it was 278 basis points. The high yield index only returned 273 basis points, so actually underperformed, which again isn't normal. What's causing that? I think we mentioned on our last podcast is the unique ownership structure of this asset class tends to result in prolonged outflow cycles. And when they happen, mutual funds are dealing with those outflows. And until we get a reversion back to inflows, the natural buyer of credit, which I would define credit as low investment grade or below investment grade, the mutual funds is absent, right? And so we're not seeing that type of recovery yet, which is the good news for investors. Even though we're seeing positive returns, the real high performing part of our market has not yet recovered. So back to our theme as we close 2022, better to be early, don't be late, still holds true. There's time to get involved.
Good. That is good news. Well, Colleen, given the sectors that you cover in the market, I'm eager to get your insights too on this. Can you talk a little bit more about the federal stimulus funding? How much is left? What are some key points that investors should be thinking about?
Sure, Denise. There was a few iterations of federal stimulus funding. First, we had the CARES funding. That totaled $347 billion of muni-centric funding, with $150 billion of that with state-specific funding. However, all of that has already been spent. That was spent in 2021. Then you had the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA funding. Now that totaled $650 billion muni-centric aid and $198 billion of state-specific aid. Now, this needs to be appropriated by 2024 and spent by 2026. So far, approximately $173 billion, or 87%, has been appropriated or earmarked for specific funding. That leaves about $25 billion left for states to spend in future budgets. Now, states have a tremendous flexibility in the ways that they use this federal funding. It can be used to support public health services, replace lost revenue, invest in infrastructure, and increases in the state unemployment trust fund. The largest funding uses have been to replace lost revenue, with the second largest being funding the state's unemployment trust fund, which is really important because at its peak in April of 2020, the unemployment rate was 14.7%. So keeping this fund afloat was a top priority for states. While states cannot use this stimulus funding to fund pension contributions, the stimulus money did free up general revenue to do this. So we saw many states being able to fully fund their annual pension contribution as a result of this stimulus funding. So I think investors need to be aware of just how unprecedented this type of funding was and how significant this has been for states and localities and the muni world in general.
And that's the interesting thing, Denise, from an investor's perspective. You know, our base case is that the aggressive Fed hiking that we talked about earlier will ultimately result in a recession. We think it's going to be sometime in the late third, fourth quarter. And, you know, we do believe that the Fed is even close to the end of their cycle before they pause. You know, certainly we think there's one more rate hike that's pretty much baked in and potentially another one. But the interesting thing is, from an investor's perspective, Colleen mentioned this flexibility. I think there are two factors. The stimulus money that's there is a tailwind for state and local governments. However, I think if we go back and retrospectively look at the post-COVID period, many state and local governments outperform their expectation. And these surpluses have resulted in some very unique things happening in our space. For instance, comment on the state of Illinois. What's happened with Illinois, Colleen?
So I would say if we're looking for a poster child of what's going on in the muni market, notable upgrades, Illinois is number one. It has historically been known for its weak fiscal management, large pension liabilities, large accounts payable, and it's always been the weakest rated state. In a huge turnaround story, it's able to use federal stimulus funds, use strong revenues to right the ship. They went from having a $16.5 billion accounts payable backlog in 2017 to $1 billion in 2022. It went from almost never fully funding its pension contribution to not even funding it, but funding more than what was required in 22 and 23. It went from having very little excess funds or rainy day funds, as state will call them, to setting up a permanent funding source for the fund and having it at 3.9% of their expenditures. Still relatively weak compared to other states, but again, much better than 0%. There are other notable upgrades in the muni market, like New Jersey, who was another state known for fiscal mismanagement and pension issues. But the general story from the muni market is that any underperformance in the market was definitely not due to weak credit, as credit has remained strong and is in a great position to weather any downturn due to strong balance sheets.
Unique opportunity. So investors are looking at a potential recession. In the fixed income world, that means lower rates, which is good for bond prices. And the unique characteristic here is typically investors would look for credit deterioration if we head into a recessionary period. And the muni market, by a twist of fate, is actually fundamentally very, very sound. So some of that angst over whether to get involved or not is somewhat solved by what we're seeing in terms of the number of upgrades and the strong credit profiles that states like Illinois and New Jersey are now boasting about.
We think that, again, sort of best case is a recession is looming. So how does that play in the muni space? What should we think about in terms of muni investments in a recession?
So I can actually tell you that states are in a better place now to weather a possible recession. Many states have been very wise in how they use their federal stimulus funding for one-time uses so as not to inflate their budget going forward in the future with ongoing higher expenses. Additionally, if you remember, when the pandemic began, most assumed that states would experience significant double-digit declines in revenues and significant deficits, hence the ginormous amount of federal funding. However, this huge decline never materialized. In fact, if you look at 2020 revenues, state-only revenues declined 1%, and that's excluding any federal aid. If we were to include federal aid that they normally receive on an annual basis, that's not stimulus aid, this normal federal aid, revenues actually increased 5%. And in 2021, state revenues increased over 21%. From 2020, and were even higher than 2019 and 2018, just showing how strong they were. Through the first quarter, three quarters of 2022, which is the census data that we currently have, it's showing continued momentum of state revenues. They're over 14% year-over-year increases. So states have taken the strong state revenues that they have, plus the federal fiscal funds, and that has resulted in very strong balance sheets. States have rainy day funds, which are just reserves used to store excess revenues. Think of it like a personal savings account that you use when, you know, you need a new roof or a new HVAC system. Historically, these rainy day funds account for about 6% of state expenditures. The rainy day fund increased 58% in 21 and another 12% in 22. To total $135 billion. This accounts for 11.5% of expenditures. So while we know federal funding will run out and a recession is looming, states have never been in a stronger position to withstand a downturn because of these strong balance sheets and fiscal management of the one-time federal stimulus funding.
Very encouraging to hear, you know, the state of the states, if you will. Circling back to something Greg said at the beginning, which is, don't be late. So talk maybe about the timing, Greg, if you would.
Yeah, I think as long as the Fed is present, I think we should expect continued volatility. The one thing I want to address with respect to the comment about not being late, and muni investors have had a couple samples twice last year and then in January of this year. And quite frankly, those numbers I gave you earlier, if we look at the early weeks of April, high yield is finally outperforming IG by about 30 basis points. So what I want to warn investors is that, you know, the piece of the pie that muni managers fight over, that high yielding below investment grade component, is only 12% of our market. It really hasn't changed over time. And it's an extremely supply constrained market right now. We're down roughly 20% year over year. The tax exempt component was down about 17 or 18% last year. And we don't see prospects for a significantly larger calendar. So I can point a scenario where around the time is the Fed is signaling, hey, we're pausing, we're going to see ultimately what the impact of this rate hiking experiment has been on the economy, because they really don't know. It's more of an art than a science. Around that time, we could start to see, based on what economic data is doing, is for people to extend, meaning going from some of the short products they've parked their money in out to the long end. And in fact, in last week's weekly flow numbers, that was the trend we saw. We saw investors leaving some short and intermediate products and extending out longer. Why? Because we had such a sell-off last year where for the first time in a while, people were not complaining about yield anymore. There is yield in the market. There is attractiveness. It's having the gumption to commit, right? To realize that we're not in a runaway rate scenario where we're seeing a new regime change in rates. Our opinion is rates will normalize and we will go to lower rates. That doesn't mean all-time lows like we saw in 2021. But for many reasons, we do think that we're not going to exit this low rate environment. So as an active manager last year, what did we do? We were extremely active in the portfolio, making sure we were accomplishing two things, booking losses so we don't pass along taxable gains, and in the same venue, increasing the embedded yield that we throw off in our portfolios. And we are a top distributor of income. And that is simply because the advisors, like the ones listening today, it's what they want. They want income, and they want it delivered in a tax efficient manner. So if your active manager was doing the right things last year, you should be earning more income off of their products.
Well, you've given us a broad view of insights in the municipal space. Thanks for sharing your insights with us, Greg and Colleen. We appreciate you being with us today, and we always enjoy getting your perspectives on these topics. So remember, you can get more insights from our investment team and the municipal market on our website. Just visit delawarefunds.com/munis to learn more. Join us next time as we discuss another topic for investors to consider. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes for more information on topics from this episode. And be sure to subscribe to Think Again wherever you get your podcasts. This recording is intended for financial professionals and institutional investors only. This is not intended for use with the general public. The views expressed in this podcast represent those of the speaker and are subject to change. Nothing presented should be construed as a recommendation to purchase or sell any security or follow any investment technique or strategy, and does not constitute advice, advertisement, an invitation, a confirmation, an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, or an offer of any banking or financial service. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal. All examples herein are for illustrative purposes only, and there can be no assurance that any particular investment objective will be realized, or any investment strategy seeking to achieve such objective will be successful. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future performance. Before acting on any information, consider the appropriateness of it with regard to your particular objectives, financial situation, and needs, and seek advice. No representation or warranty expressed or implied is made as to the accuracy or completeness of the information, opinions, and conclusions presented. In preparing this recording, reliance has been placed, without independent verification, on the accuracy and completeness of all information available from external sources. Macquarie Asset Management is the asset management division of Macquarie Group. Macquarie Asset Management is a full-service asset manager offering a diverse range of products across public and private markets, including fixed income, equities, multi-asset solutions, private credit, infrastructure, renewables, natural assets, real estate, and asset finance. The public investment business is a part of Macquarie Asset Management and includes investment products and advisory services distributed and offered by and referred through affiliates, which include Delaware Distributors, LP, a registered broker/dealer and member of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and Macquarie Investment Management Business Trust, a Securities and Exchange Commission registered investment advisor. Investment advisory services are provided by a series of MIMBT. Macquarie Group refers to Macquarie Group Limited and its subsidiaries and affiliates worldwide. Delaware Funds by Macquarie refers to certain investment solutions that Macquarie Asset Management Public Investment distributes, offers, refers, or advises. Other than the Macquarie Bank Limited, any Macquarie Group entity noted in this podcast is not an authorized deposit-taking institution for the purposes of the Banking Act 1959. The obligations of these other Macquarie Group entities do not represent deposits or other liabilities of Macquarie Bank. Macquarie Bank does not guarantee or otherwise provide assurance in respect of the obligations of these Macquarie Group entities. In addition, if this podcast relates to an investment, the investor is subject to investment risk, including possible delays of repayment and loss of income and principal invested, and none of the Macquarie Bank or any other Macquarie Group entity guarantees any particular rate of return on or the performance of the investment, nor do they guarantee repayment of capital in respect of the investment.